Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I will readily admit off the top of the program today that this show is a little bit weird to do because the typical things that we would talk about on a day like this, it's almost as if you're not really quite sure what to say about them right now. You know, if you've been listening to us for the last few days, it's a lot of, hey, spring practice is about to begin, and here's what we're excited about, and here's what you can expect to see, and boy, can't wait for G-Day on April the 18th. That's all kind of up in the air for the moment, at least. I can't tell you with great certainty how any of that's going to play out. Same thing for the other big topic that we typically hit here, the twin pillar that goes along with the on-field stuff, recruiting. Hey, the 2021 class about to heat up. You got some guys about to make some decisions. You've got some finalists about to be dropped. Visits are about to begin again. And yet when you see some of the stuff that's kind of gone on around college football the last couple of days, that also is kind of up in the air in the moment. This is a weird time. The coronavirus is a disruption to our life, and it would seem that the disruption's about to get more intense before it gets even better. And I'll be very honest with you here. The same way that I've always been very open about my bias about on-field stuff, I'm a Georgia fan, I want Georgia to do well, and I've always kind of approached the show by making sure you're aware of that, I'll be very clear about my bias on this too. I am really, really hopeful that things get back to normal soon. I am really, really cheering for everybody to be healthy and everything to kind of subside with this and everything kind of fall back into place. I'll be completely honest that I am seeking an outcome here. I want things to be put back together. For now, though, it would appear with the NBA canceling its games and everything that's going on, we are kind of a ways away from it all being put back together right now, one way or another. We'll do a lot of that on the show today. We'll bring in Mike Griffith here later on from Nashville. He had great reporting last night as the SEC made the decision to alter its basketball tournament scenario and everything going on with that. We'll talk to Mike about that. We'll hear from Commissioner Greg Sankey on today's show. Georgia Athletic Director Greg McGarrity, good reporting once again from Mike Griffith on that. We'll kind of do all of that. It's a weird day here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Meriwether and Tharp. However, when possible, we always want to try to get some good news. When possible, we always want to serve the purpose of distracting you from the more serious, unknown scenarios involving life. We know that's our job around here. It's our job to be a distraction. And I thought yesterday, and I hope that you didn't miss it, and that's one of the reasons why I'm going to begin the show this way for a couple of minutes today. The way in which ESPN kind of surprised the former Georgia great David Pollack to let him know that he had made the College Football Hall of Fame, I thought was awesome. I thought it would be awesome on any day that it happened. I thought it was almost necessarily awesome on a day like yesterday, where admittedly, I think a lot of us are just kind of down in the dumps about the fact that some of the things that we like are kind of upended for right now, and some of the people that we love might be in a more, I guess, you know, precarious health situation. I think that getting some good news, getting some relief from all that, that's sports' job. And I thought yesterday ESPN, Reese Davis, kind of sitting in there on the SportsCenter set to let David Pollack know that he made the College Football Hall of Fame, I thought it was great. I can't play the video for you. If you go to DogNation.com, you can see the video for yourself. But I will play you a little bit of audio here. Pollack had been a nominee for the College Football Hall of Fame. And much the same way that we saw some of this on, like, say, Fox and some of the other networks to honor guys, CBS did this as well, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, ESPN kind of taking a page from that playbook to let David Pollack know he made the College Football Hall of Fame. Let me set this up one more way and then let you get a chance to hear from it. So Pollack is at the indoor facility in Athens for this. He's kind of remotely kind of locked in there. The ESPN folks are obviously in Bristol, and it sounded a little something like this yesterday.
We're about to make some announcements right now, so on behalf of the National Football Foundation Honors Court and the College Football Hall of Fame, I'd like to congratulate you on being a member of the 2020 College Football Hall of Fame class.
Yay!
Three times, first team All-American. Only one other Georgia player ever to do that's Herschel Walker. Mm-hmm. Two-time SEC Player of the Year, third in history in sacks. His resume is impeccable and well-deserving of this honor.
Y'all are sneaky, huh? Bringing in RD, making an announcement. I hear y'all. Yeah,
we're
talking
to
you. Oh, wow. We've even got the family now? Wow.
Good job.
Awesome. I don't know if y'all ripped my earpiece out, but amazing. Wow. All right. Well, thank you.
What the audio doesn't necessarily convey there is at the end, Pollock was also surprised by his family. His parents, his wife, his children kind of show up and greet him there as well. And it's just a really cool thing. And it makes me feel old because, gosh, it seems like 2 seconds ago that Pollock was at Georgia. And I remember being at Williams-Brice Stadium with the strip sack touchdown against the Gamecocks that day and all the other great moments that Pollock had. I mean, has it really been long enough that we're now enshrining this guy in the College Football Hall of Fame? By the way, he's in better shape now than he was then. It's really amazing the physical condition that he's kept himself in, and just a really cool honor. We were actually talking about Pollock a little bit yesterday off the air around here. I know this is a tired discussion. I know this is kind of a tired argument to have, but you know the concept of Mount Rushmore, like the four greatest anything. You can have Mount Rushmores for pro football, basketball, whatever else you want to do. If you do the Mount Rushmore for Georgia football, if you only give yourself four names to mention, I feel pretty confident in saying I believe that Pollock's on that four somehow. We know Herschel Walker's obviously there. You would debate the other three. I feel like it'd be hard to find three that are more deserving for that honor than Pollock is. One of the four most significant figures ever involved in Georgia football. I think you can make a pretty strong case for that. You know, we were talking about his resume. You know, he won the Bednarik Award in 2002. Just kind of a cool-sounding award, right? I mean, just such an incredible career, and you kind of debate for yourself, individual, if he had made a bigger impact in any of his seasons than, like, say, Roquan Smith did in 2017. From individual season standpoint, Roquan was pretty dadgum good for Georgia a couple of years ago, but for the totality of a career, it's just hard to eclipse Pollock. I think on the defensive side of the ball, with apologies to Roquan and maybe a Champ Bailey and some others you might mention, I feel like Pollock's probably the best defensive player this program's ever produced, I feel like. And I just think in the future, these kind of surprise Hall of Fame announcements, I think that ought to be the way that a lot of these go. When possible, you know, let us see the reaction in the moment, because there's nothing better than seeing these people that we have lionized in our mind as like these ultra tough, incredibly, you know, larger than life figures reduced to emotion and sentimentality about the career they have. Because for so many of us, we also kind of have that same level of emotion and sentimentality, even though it wasn't our career, it wasn't our life, it was just us observing their life. But I do feel a greater sense of connection with Pollock, having seen him hear about this for the first time. So an incredible job by ESPN honoring what was, as you know, an unbelievable career. And I just, I'm proud for him. We're going to try to get David on the show here coming up pretty soon. Today didn't feel like the right day to try to do that, but we're going to try to do it really soon. And I just think a lot of Georgia fans will truly honor him. By the way, we talked to John Stinchcomb on Monday. I heard a pretty interesting story about Stinchcomb and Pollock. We'll talk about that then. So just a great way to really distract from what was a very weird news day yesterday. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp, we've probably done all the avoiding on that. We probably can. Last night, Georgia got a win in the SEC tournament. And I thought that was, really, all things being equal, a pretty good performance for Georgia against Ole Miss, and a nice testament to a team that had looked really bad its last two times out to go out there and get the win against Ole Miss. But after the game, things got a little weird. The Georgia players and coaches, having been involved in the game, focused on their opponent, were not aware of the alteration to the schedule or the alteration to the I guess, environment's probably the better way to say that the SEC had decided to do. The rest of the tournament will be played without fans at Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. And it was weird last night to hear Georgia coach Tom Crean essentially find out about that as he spoke to reporters. Here is what that sounded like.
The news had just broke that there won't be any fans allowed in the arena for the rest of the week. What does that mean to y'all in terms of the lack of atmosphere?
Yeah, no fans.
Yeah, no fans for the rest of the week.
We didn't know that, so they're probably not in a position to answer that. We're just finding that out. It's hard.
I just know that like the fans have always like brought the atmosphere a lot of the season for y'all. I just didn't know if you have initial reactions on what that might mean with no fans in the building.
Keep going. We gotta bring it.
Who is allowed in?
It says limited access, some friends and family, credentialed members of the media.
Yeah, well, we're just learning for the first time. I'll answer for it. We'll adjust, right? It'll be the same for the other teams, so we'll do everything we have to do to adjust. And it's in this world right now, that's the new normal. It's the new normal that's come quickly, right? So we'll be some of the first to figure it out.
I don't know who the reporter is, but she does a nice job there kind of pivoting to get an answer from Crane on the topic. And he's in a tough spot because, as he said, he's just finding out about this for the very first time. On the court, it's hard not to kind of draw back to, was it 2008? The years kind of run together for me when Georgia won the SEC tournament at, it was 2008, at Georgia Tech. I was actually there that day. The Kentucky game was very weird, the one that Georgia won, because that in itself was almost a fanless type game. So I was there for that. If you're thinking only about on-court stuff for a moment, hard not to draw the connection to the game that got moved, or the tournament that got moved from the Georgia Dome to Alexander Memorial Coliseum, during that tornado struck year in Atlanta, which Georgia actually ended up winning the entire tournament. Hard not to draw that parallel. But as far as the bigger picture stuff goes, you know, Crean kind of calls this a new normal, and I think he means that for college basketball, and he says his team will be among the first to figure that out. But for at least right now, in all of athletics, college football even, we're in kind of a new normal. As I said before, I don't really know how to talk to y'all about recruiting right now because schools like Michigan and Ohio State have essentially made the announcement that they're not going to host any recruits right now, at least for the next few weeks. They're not bringing people on campus. They've kind of halted that. I think Virginia has suspended all of its football operations right now. There could be others here coming up pretty soon. I'm going to give you some audio in a moment of what has been said about the future of G-Day as it's slated to currently take place on April the 18th. We're in a weird time. In one way or another, this spring, Georgia's supposed to start spring practice on Tuesday. It's going to be different. Now, in the big picture thing for the world at large, that's obviously a small consideration based on the health of our country and the health of the people around the world. I totally get that, but this is a show that's typically devoted to Georgia football. And Georgia football is a very difficult thing to talk about today. So I think that Tom Crean's words there, as his team gets ready to play again today, are probably accurate. That at least for the next few weeks, we are in a very different kind of, as he says, new normal. It won't feel normal at all, but it's the world we live in, at least for right now. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Meriwether and Tharp. And it's good to have you with us no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Radio Noon, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and available as a podcast wherever you find them, Apple, Spotify, the Google Podcast Player. I post the show every day at theworldfamousdognation.com. Just really glad to have all of you with us, and really thankful to my friends at Meriwether and Tharp for making it all possible. You know, a lot of you find yourself going through the divorce process right now, you know, dealing with a relationship that seems broken beyond repair. And if that's your case, I'm so sorry. My prayers truly are with you. And, you know, if you're in a relationship that can be saved, you ought to try to do everything you can to save it. But if you find that it's just gone too far and things are now in a situation where you got to make a different decision, let me tell you about my friends at Meriwether and Tharp. They can make a scary and confusing process like the divorce process easier to navigate. It may be the first time you're going through this, but they've been through this thousands of times. And that institutional knowledge, institutional memory gained over that experience, they can put that to work for you. So reach out to them online. They are your source for Georgia divorce. You can find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. Website, once again, theatlantadivorceteam.com. And Meriwether and Tharp can help you become whole again. Protect your finances, protect your relationship with your family and your children. They can help you with all of that. They are really good at doing that. It's an important job. They do it well. TheAtlantaDivorceTeam.com to get in touch with my friends at Meriwether and Tharp. All right, it's Around the Doghouse now. It's Mike Griffith live from Nashville coming up in just a moment here. Mike, really good reporting on the scene yesterday in Nashville, getting a chance to catch up with Georgia Athletic Director Greg McGarrity. You just heard Tom Crean say what's going to feel like to now have to get ready to play an SEC tournament game without fans. It's not just men's basketball that's going to deal with this. Throughout the rest of this month, at least, all of the SEC sporting events, that means baseball and everything else going on this spring, until the end of March at least, they will all be played without fans in attendance. It is a sweeping measure on the part of the SEC to help protect against the spread of the disease that we now call the coronavirus. And McGarrity was asked by our Mike Griffith yesterday, what was his reaction upon hearing the SEC come down with this new order? And here's what McGarrity had to say about that.
We will follow that same protocol for all our events on campus, whatever they may be, baseball, softball, tennis, gymnastics, actually, Saturday night in Stegman. We'll follow the new protocol. So we've got to be sure that we communicate that effectively to everyone, to the parents of our student-athletes, to staff, to our fans, and it's just unfortunate that we're at this point, but after listening to what all the medical professionals say, there was no other recourse but to follow this guidance.
There are obviously larger considerations here than sports, but we are a sports show, so we're going to talk about sports. I think a basketball game played in a fanless gym, to me, I don't think it's going to alter the results all that much if I had to guess. The better team probably still wins. But I sort of get the impression that like a gymnastics event taking place without fans, I mean, this is a judges scored event. You almost wonder if the lack of applause or the lack of fan reaction to a well-performed stunt, you almost wonder if that's somehow going to alter the judging on this. Of all the sports that are potentially made different by not having fans in the venue, I'm no gymnastics expert. Most of y'all are well aware of that. But you almost wonder if, like, a fanless gymnastics meet, you might have a little more impact by not having people in the building. But that's obviously the extraordinary step that has to be taken right now to stop this disease before it spreads further into the population. The SEC being very proactive on that. Now, it is interesting that, as I said before, spring practice is slated to go on March 17th. That's Tuesday. So the SEC teams, including Georgia, will be practicing during a time in which other athletic events are greatly changed, greatly altered. What does this mean then for G-Day? Even larger crowd expected to be on hand for that on April the 18th. Tens upon tens of thousands of people have been in Athens in each of the last few years for the annual spring scrimmage. What do we make of the future of G-Day right now? Well, McGarity talked more about that.
I just ask the fans to be patient, and more information will be forthcoming at the end of March. Of course, the game is April 18th, so we've still got some time left, but I would just say stay tuned and we'll see what the landscape looks like. But as we know, things change so rapidly with getting our hands around the coronavirus. So we learn more every day, and I'm sure we'll be probably meeting on a conference call every day for the next week or so to get updated on the status of play.
I think one of the tricky things about spring football games is that G-Day is kind of a big deal for Georgia fans in Athens. There's a huge crowd, and you know, people seem to really enjoy being a part of it. But around the country, spring football games just aren't quite as big, seemingly, as they used to be. There are a lot of big programs that even barely have what could be called a spring game. It's essentially almost a glorified practice that fans are just allowed to watch. So that's always the kind of thing for those of us who want to hold on to the G-Day tradition and want to hold on to really spring football games around the rest of the SEC. The fact that these things are a little more out of style some places than they used to be. So just kind of keep that in mind that, you know, there is a little bit of TV coverage for this, but this is not like, say, the NCAA tournament where there are billions of dollars invested in putting this on TV. So therefore, there's a little bit more of an imperative thought about having the game. Spring football is not quite that same way. Now, I'm not going to make any kind of prediction one way or another about how this goes down, but just the kind of changing feeling about spring games around the country, I think, factor into maybe what happens here over the course of the next few weeks. We'll obviously watch that and see how that plays out. It's around the doghouse. It's Dog Nation Daily presented by Merriweather and Tharp. And as I said before, incredible reporting over the last 24 hours from Mike Griffith in Nashville, where Georgia got itself a really big basketball win. You hate to see that completely covered up by the other events, but this is a huge news story that suddenly sports, and for now the SEC in particular, is right in the middle of coronavirus completely disrupting the normalcy of our lives here for the moment. For more on that from Nashville, where it's all going down, let's talk to Mike Griffith here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Mike, I said this before you joined us. I'll say it again now that you're here. And by the way, yes, you are back for a second straight day on the show. That's a little bit of a breach of protocol for us, but important to hear from you again because of, you know, kind of what's going on in Nashville right now. Before we get to the facts of, you know, what happened in the basketball game, what's going to happen here moving forward, and everything that, you know, Commissioner Greg Sankey and Athletic Director Greg McGarity have said the last 24 hours. Let me start this way. What does it feel like to be in Nashville right now? Does it feel like the city as any other time? Is there an eerie sense of quiet the way that we've kind of seen video from other places? Big city, downtown environment. Does it still feel like Nashville, or does it feel a little bit more like of some of the stuff we've seen on television where visually we just obviously notice an alteration on the part of people taking precautions with the coronavirus? What's the feeling in Music City right now?
You know, Brandon, I think this is one of those situations that depends on the lens that you're looking at it through. You know, I think that, you know, in the arena, you know, every cough is treated with suspicion. Every handshake is considered, reconsidered. You know, you look around and you wonder if somebody, this is last night, if somebody among those 8,000 had the virus. You know, you just, those thoughts have to be there. I mean, it's an awareness. Now, that's if you're there. If you're watching it on TV, then what the hell is everybody worried about, right? So much of it has to do with your perspective, your proximity to it, your experience, your life experience. I think, and I guess I can't speak for everyone else, so I won't. But I'll say in my mind, the last time I felt this sort of awareness and social crisis was probably 9/11. That's the last time I felt something that was this gripping in terms of the potential impact and the uncertainty that's ahead. Now, the virus itself, I don't know much more about than anyone who's tried to research it online or listen to the health professionals, who, by the way, also have a wide varying opinions on this. But the reaction is what's very real and what affects all of us, whether we're going to the grocery store, whether we're considering our loved ones, our travel plans. That's very real. That's very undeniable, the reaction to this, and the social pressures that go along with it. So to answer your question, I think it depends on who you're talking to, but I felt like in the media last night, there was a lot of concern. And there was a lot of concern among the journalists. You know, announcements were coming as the press conference was going on. A TV guy says out loud, they just canceled the rest of the NBA season. You hear somebody say that the player that was affected touched every microphone in a room a week ago in jest of the virus. It just seems like it keeps getting worse.
You know, it's not fair to ask you to speculate too much, so I'm not going to. I'm going to try to phrase this question as appropriately as I can. Do you get the sense from other reporters that you talk to that there is certainty about whether or not this tournament finishes off on Sunday? Because you mentioned the NBA making the decision to halt play, at least for now. That kind of brought to mind some people of, well, does that put March Madness in jeopardy? The SEC was pretty clear, you know, yesterday in terms of the absence of fans now. But will there be a tournament champion crowned on Sunday? Is it too early to know that yet? Or is the plan that was put in place by Greg Sankey yesterday the one that you think remains in place through the weekend?
Well, I would start off by saying I don't feel like this is Greg Sankey's decision. I sense that listening to Greg, and I've listened to Greg Sankey a lot. I've been around him in a lot of settings for many years. This does not seem like somebody who's in charge. And that's not an insult to Greg, but I feel like he's taking his marching orders from somebody else. When Greg Sankey's in charge, he has a certain level of command. And a certain presence. I feel like he's in a very reactive mode right now, and that makes him uncomfortable. Intelligent people who don't have all the facts in front of them get very uncomfortable. And that's where I feel like Greg Sankey is at. I feel like that's where a lot of our leaders are at. You know, I feel like people in positions of authority right now recognize that they're making decisions that affect so many others and without all the information in front of them. And to me, that's the most frightening thing of all this, is the unknown, right? How many times have you heard it? Man's greatest fear is of the unknown. That's the greatest fear, is the unknown. Do I think this tournament will finish? No, I don't. I'm still not sure they're going to play games today because the simple logic and rationale that if paying professionals have had their season suspended, how can the NCAA ask student-athletes that don't get compensated to play for free? And if you measure risk versus reward, if you buy that social distancing is indeed part of the methodology to slow this down, what's the value of one tournament game versus the spread of what's become a global pandemic?
Yeah, we should also point out that while the NBA has suspended play, other sports leagues doing things a little bit differently. The Players' Championship, which is the single biggest golf tournament run by the PGA Tour, the four majors are run by other governing bodies. That is currently ongoing in Ponte Vedra, Florida. So not every sports league. The NHL has not canceled games as of yet. NASCAR is still slated to go in Atlanta on Sunday, at least for right now, and on Saturday as well. So certain sports leagues have taken a little bit different approach to the NBA. So it's difficult to kind of factor in, you know, how all of this is going to play out in terms of the different ways that certain leagues have approached this. And, Mike, you know, I've said this disclaimer a couple times. I'll say it again. I think you and I both know that there are larger than football concerns with all of this, larger than sports concerns with all of this. This impacts the health of many of the people who are watching, listening to us right now, and yet this is still a sports show, and obviously we are a show that's dedicated to talking about Georgia football. Spring practice is supposed to begin on Tuesday. One way or another, this is going to be a very different kind of spring practice for Georgia. Almost seems hard to imagine it wouldn't be, right?
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I think it starts with the testing of the student athletes and making sure that, you know, everybody is, you know, healthy. I guess they could come in contact with other people outside. And but, I, you know, B.A., my thought is that Georgia, you know, talking to Greg McGarrity last night, you know, he said basically it's far too early to make any announcements, decisions, projections about April 18th. I know that some conferences have already, some schools, I guess, I think I heard Ohio State canceled their spring game. I think it's too early for that. Again, there's just too much of an unknown about this. But I think that Georgia will proceed with their spring football and their training. I do. I think they'll go forward with it until directed otherwise. And, you know, the thing about the, you know, the fact that a lot of young people, you know, aren't dying from this, right? That's not the concern. The concern is the spread of it.
Right.
And then ultimately the young people come in contact with others in the society that are compromised. So it's a complex issue. It's not a surface value, issue. Well, if young people, you know, can't die from it, then what's the harm? Well, you know, it's spreading rapidly and there's an unknown, element to this. So how leadership reacts to this, we've seen Vanderbilt University suspend face-to-face classes. We've seen Florida. We're not yet certain about Georgia. There's still time, I guess, for them to cancel classes. I know we've speculated on that. And if that's the case, you know, then what happens with football? So I think you're going down the right path with your speculation.
Yeah, and the other thing is, just from a logistical standpoint, Mike, I think you're probably aware of this, G-Day is kind of an outlier around the country right now. Even for a lot of major programs, spring football is just not as big maybe as it used to be, or maybe it was never all that big. Like, G-Day, for the most part, is pretty big business around here. A lot of fans show up. There's a lot of folks that are reading about it, you know, watching our videos about it and things along those lines. But around the rest of the country, spring football is just not kind of what it once was. And I don't think there's a clamoring on the part of, like, say, ESPN, the SEC Network, to have these games televised the same way there would be for, like, say, March Madness. Even though college basketball is not as big as football, that TV entity is huge. It's a multi-billion-dollar product. The networks want March Madness. You know, I think one of the things that potentially puts a spring game in jeopardy, and this is, at this point in time, I guess, just rampant speculation, is the fact that there are a lot of schools around the country that sort of be okay with just not playing a spring game because, for whatever reason, it's just not as big to them as kind of G-Day has kind of grown to be with many Georgia fans.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, I would also say, though, I wouldn't rule out anything as far as how television networks handle spring games this particular spring. Especially if the NCAA tournament is ultimately canceled, which it's not. I'm not, you know, I don't have any reason to believe that. Excuse me, read that anywhere. But if that were to happen, how would the networks make up for that revenue? And I don't know the window of this pandemic. I don't know. But let's just say, best case scenario, perhaps, that spring games go on April 18th forward. You know, perhaps the networks change their coverage plans. You know, perhaps they try to recoup some of the losses. I don't think the wraparound coverage would any longer be much of a plan. As you said, they've already kind of downplayed it. The entirety of the Georgia spring game wasn't even going to be on television. I think only, LSU was one, and Auburn might have been the other that was going to be showing start to finish. They were on different weekends, and then there was going to be wraparound. So, you know, to me, it's you know, I texted with McGarrity this morning and had a brief discussion about this. And, you know, the bottom line is uncharted territory.
Yeah. Right?
That's where we're at. There's nothing off the table. All things will be considered. It's unprecedented. What we're going through is it's a historic time. And it is. And it's something that, you know, life, you know, what did Tom Crane say last night? This is the new norm for now, right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting when we reflect on it. This is something that'll be a game changer, I think, moving forward for spectator events.
So let me try to bring this back to sports here just for a moment to try to have some fun with what I thought was a good win for Georgia yesterday against Ole Miss in a game that I don't think I would have seen coming on the base the way that Georgia played the last two times it went out there. Mike, I'll make light of a serious situation here for a moment in that, you know, I was in Alexander Memorial Coliseum back in 2008 for the Kentucky game when all those Kentucky fans are essentially held out of the building. They kind of wrapped all the way around what used to be known as the Thriller Dome there. They weren't allowed inside. That game felt a little bit like what today may feel like. There were still bands. There were still cheerleaders. So from that standpoint, it was still a great deal different than what Nashville's going to be like today. But, you know, I don't know that Georgia wins that game with Kentucky fans in the building, nor do I think Georgia wins that tournament that year had it been held at the Georgia Dome. Sometimes the underdog benefits from kind of a weird thing happening. And for Georgia today, you know, it still can focus on one more game for Ant-Man in a Georgia uniform and one more opportunity to kind of go out there and finish the season on a high note after some games in which Georgia, I think, would like to have back based on the way that it played a few times. For this team, they've got their own responsibilities to think about today, right? And a chance to go out and play well and continue to write the story of their time together, correct?
Oh, no doubt. You know, and that was, you know, you could see that and hear that in their voices last night. I mean, you saw it in their play. I mean, Rashawn Hammonds was as dialed in and focused as I've ever seen him. You know, it was an incredible performance on his part. 22 points and 11 rebounds. Jordan Harris was outstanding. He had 21 points. I mean, this is on a night when Anthony Edwards was, what, 2 of 12 shooting? You know, Anthony Edwards scores 6 points and has a bad shooting night, and you win by 18. I think that says a lot about this Georgia basketball team. You know, their ability to rebound after, you know, losses of, what, 14 to Florida at home and 30 on the road to LSU, and they show up here, you know, ready to play amid all this controversy, amid all this adversity, this strange situation, and yet Georgia is the team that's pulled together and playing its best basketball. That says something about the leadership. I got to give Georgia a lot of credit for that. It would have been easy to cash your chips in, especially when your best player's not hitting a shot. But the team rallied around him. They talked about it last night. They said, hey, you know, we were still plus 18 with him on the floor. He did a lot of other good things. You know, I was impressed with the unity that I saw and the effort that I saw and the execution that I saw. And if they do play today, I wouldn't rule out a win over Florida. I really wouldn't. They played really well last night. And, you know, Tom Crean really seems to, you know, have a grip on this and, you know, kind of showing his leadership right now.
What was it like, this is on Broadway, when you walked out? Bridgestone Arena is right there on Broadway in downtown Nashville. Was there music coming from the venues? Were the streets as packed as normal? What was the scene on Broadway last night? Is fear and concern about this disease, to your eyes, causing people to stay away from the popular attractions that Nashville is so famous for?
Well, I didn't spend a lot of time down there, but from what I saw, it didn't look as busy as it usually does to me. You know, I've been to Nashville for some events. It didn't look quite as busy as it usually does. There didn't seem to be quite, you know, now remember, it was the first session. You know, today could be an entirely different story. But it didn't feel normal to me, I guess. And as I said at the start of the conversation, you know, that depends on the lens, right? And I'm looking at this through a different lens than probably some 21-year-old kid celebrating his birthday in Nashville. You know, it all looks good to him, right? Beer's cold and having a good time. You know, but as an older person, more experienced, seen a lot more things, you know, I'm a little bit more wary of situations like this and wanting to be responsible, wanting to be aware, which is what I think everyone should do. It's an awareness deal more than anything. But to answer your question, it didn't look quite as turned up as it usually does. But it wasn't, the streets weren't bare either. It wasn't like the start of Vanilla Sky with Tom Crean. Dating myself a little bit more there.
3:30 p.m. today, Georgia versus Florida in the SEC tournament from Nashville. Mike, thanks for your coverage here for DogNation.com. We appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
Same to you, BA. Have a good one, man.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Weird conversation, man. We are living in weird, weird times right now. But Mike has done a great job covering everything for us up there in Nashville for the SEC tournament. Speaking of the SEC, let's get ready to go cruising around the SEC right now, courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. And one of the things I love about Royal Caribbean is the oasis of the seas. And one of the reasons I feel that way is because a lot of you've been on ships like this before. You know, you think, well, I took a cruise in the oasis of the seas however many number of years ago. What you may not realize, though, is what Royal Caribbean has taken painstaking care to do is to amplify a lot of these ships, reimagining them, making them better than ever before, and Oasis of the Sea is a perfect example of that. Adding Ultimate Abyss, which is the tallest slide at sea. It's a dry slide that plunges down 10 decks. What an amazing thing to experience when you're on a cruise vacation. Same thing with Playmaker Sports and Arcade, or Music Hall, or Lime and Coconut. A lot of these nightlife, bar, restaurant-type things that Royal Caribbean has on board these ships. Just an amazing, amazing experience, and a great chance for you to find out about that is talk to your travel advisor and say, hey, BA was telling me about Oasis of the Seas. Tell me when I can be on this ship and tell me all the fun things I can do about that. And if you can't, don't have a travel advisor, if you've never used one before, let me make a recommendation for you. My friends at the Cruise and Vacation Authority, it's 800-326-4971. That's 800-326-4971. That'll get you in touch with the Cruise and Vacation Authority, and they can help you plan a great vacation on a Royal Caribbean cruise sometime for the future. All right, really good stuff here. Let me, though, bring down the music just for a moment because I want to play some audio, and it's sometimes hard to hear the audio when you're doing the music. So yesterday, Mike Griffith was a part of the conversation with Greg Sankey, SEC commissioner, on the topic of everything that's going on with the coronavirus and the response to it by the SEC. This is a little longer clip than we would typically play, but this is Sankey kind of addressing the scenario of now playing the rest of the SEC tournament without fans. Here is what Sankey said about that yesterday.
Decisions through the day. We're going to continue with our tournament. I continue to believe it's important that we give all 14 teams who arrived here in Nashville the opportunity to play for a conference tournament championship and our automatic bid. We're going to continue to do that, but as the day progressed, we received some news, some information from the NCAA, particularly the Board of Governors information from what is called the COVID-19 Advisory Group, a group of 11 or 12 people, six are medical doctors, experts in their field. I'm certainly not an immunologist or an infectious disease specialist, but after the news broke from the NCAA, we were with our athletics directors. We convened a conference call of our presidents and chancellors and advanced a recommendation that we alter our fan access, which we've done. So we've sent a press release that communicates that. We've also altered access to our regular season events on campus, both conference versus conference and conference teams versus non-conference teams, between tomorrow, March 12th, and Monday, March 30th. We'll obviously be reviewing circumstances during that time to see if that may be extended or we can conclude our approach on March 30th and return to operations.
So I think that's well said by Greg Sankey there, and I said this off the top of the program today, that ultimately my bias in all this is hoping that on March 31st, you know, there is a window, a way forward to say, okay, good, things are back to normal, and everybody can kind of get back and doing, you know, everything you want to do this spring, whether it be, you know, going to some sporting event, going to spring game, you know, whatever you're interested in, that all of this is now heading towards that direction. I'm hopeful for that. And I think it's important to have people out there on the lookout for a good news and, you know, for getting better and kind of heading in that direction. The fact that Sankey kind of, you know, mentions that, that, you know, this is more than just aggressively taking action to cancel things. This is also being aggressively on the lookout for the opportunity to kind of get things back to normal. I think that's good for Sankey to say that. I also think that Sankey's word that the SEC tournament being, he uses it, important to give the 14 teams a chance. I think important is a well-used word there, because I think when it comes to canceling a competition, that has to be a last resort type measure. And I'm not an expert enough to say when it's a good idea and when it's not. The one thing you'll never hear me say is so-and-so should have done this or so-and-so should have done that. I'm not a, is it immunologist or whatever you call it? I don't know about this kind of stuff. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a trained scientist. I'm literally just a podcast/streaming video radio host. So my opinion on this doesn't matter for much. But I do know that slow to cancel is, I think, probably the right idea for society overall. So the SEC is going to play this without fans and try to get the competition in, as Sankey said, give the 14 teams a chance to finish their season and earn their way into an NCAA tournament, if at all possible. I do think that's important. It's just sort of good for the psyche of our society to at least have some degree of normalcy. And for the guys, in this case, we're talking about guys, for the guys who've laid it on the line all season long, if you can give them a chance at finality, if you can give them a chance at some sort of closure on the season, a shot to earn it on the court or not, then, you know, I think it's right to try to figure out a way to do that if you can do so while also keeping everyone safe. Obviously, the Ivy League, who's only had a conference tournament for a couple of years, made a different decision the other day, and a lot of the coaches and teams were kind of hurt by that decision. Doesn't mean it was the wrong decision. I think a lot of us are still learning what exactly we're facing when it comes to this disease and how much the cancellations of certain things like that impact our return to full health as a community. But a lot of Ivy League fans and Ivy League players and coaches were not happy about that. The fact that the SEC is trying to get this tournament in to the extent that they can, to the extent that it makes sense from a health standpoint, I think is probably a really good thing. And, you know, once again here, on the subject of those spring games and kind of how all that plays out, obviously with these fanless events taking place up until March 31st, that puts us right on the doorstep of what's going to go on for spring games. And good job by reporters in Nashville yesterday also asking Greg Sankey about that.
We had very brief conversations about spring games and various activities, so we'll be reconnecting. I think most of those are outside of our March 30 window. I'm not exactly certain that I track on that. We're proceeding with other things. We have, I think, a video review session this weekend for football preparation. So some elements will continue. We obviously have been in a crisis consideration, a crisis management situation, so that's kept our attention on the immediate issues I've described. And we'll be reconnecting both as a staff tonight and in the future days and weeks, and then with our athletics directors and campus leaders or presidents and chancellors in the weeks ahead about other issues.
I mean, I guess the only thing I'll say on this subject that I haven't really said yet is that I am really glad that I have a job where I get to talk about the decision other people made. These kinds of decisions to have a spring game or not, I would not want to be the person in charge having to make that decision right now, because I don't know how you sift through all the information that's out there, decide what's true and what's not, what's real and what's not, what's a valid concern, what might be exaggerated, what's a concern that's been downplayed that might be more serious than was initially let on. I don't know how you sift through all of that and make that decision. There are repercussions when you greatly alter life as we know it. When you put things on pause in such an aggressive way, it has ramifications other ways. So there's a consequence on both sides of a decision like this. Ultimately, the number one concern is the health of the people in the communities impacted by SEC campuses. It's a tough job for Greg McGarrity right now. It's a tough job for Greg Sankey. And there really is no blueprint for how to handle this. I mean, you know, sports fans are comparers by nature. This player reminds you of that player. This season reminds you of that season. This historical event is a little bit like what happened, blah, 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 in the past. I've even done that on the show, harkening back to the 2008 SEC basketball tournament. It was finished at Georgia Tech after the tornado struck downtown Atlanta and prevented the game from being played at the Georgia Dome. But the truth is, it's not that similar to this situation. That I think we're actually entering into a world now where we almost have no sports memory to kind of call back on to make us feel better about whatever this is. This is literally a decision process for people in charge over the course of the next few weeks, next few days, as we think about March Madness. There's almost no precedent to help guide your decision. So prayers to everyone who finds themselves in the situation of having to make a choice to make the public safer here and make, you know, people feel good about things moving forward. Not an easy time for the people in charge right now. So as we're wrapping up here, and we can bring that news down just a little bit more. As we're wrapping up here, you know, our buddy Connor Riley, who's producing this today, was laughing before the show began, said, B.A., are you still going to do the Gator Hater update? And my thing on this is that when we talk about rivalries and, you know, whether I'm joking about some other fan base on Twitter or doing the Gator Hater update here, you know, sports hate, I always use air quotes around that, because while we hate Florida and hate the Gators and do the Gator Hater deal, for us, that's never been about hating people. That it's more about the fun that comes from being a rival. So from that standpoint, no, we're not going to stop doing the Gator Hater Updater. That's the purpose of what we have here when it comes to football, what we have here when it comes to sports, to give us something to distract our attention away. So if it makes you feel better today, know that it's been 1,230 days since the lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs, then we've done our job here. We've entertained you for a little while, and we'll see you back here again tomorrow as well.